Good morning. Thanks for joining us. I'm Twanda Black, your host. And as we all know, every city, every state, probably every country is facing an urban blight of sorts, which is murder and crime and just all kinds of things going on. And here to talk with us is Bishop E.W. Jackson. He is the founder and senior pastor of The Called Church, founder of the Chesapeake Martin Luther King Jr. Leadership Breakfast, and founder and president of Stand Foundation, Staying True to America's National Destiny, and here to talk about what our political candidates should be doing, our presidential candidates. Do they have a plan for urban America? And I think your answer to that, sir, is absolutely not, right?
Well, if they do, Twanda, they're keeping it a closely held secret. they're not talking about it. And it's really striking to me. It would be different if things were, you know, sort of at a stalemate and there wasn't much happening. But there is massive upheaval going on. I mean, we've got the Black Lives Matter movement. We've had the killings, the police killings, where, you know, it's caused tremendous upheaval in Baltimore and Ferguson. And then we've got the spikes in murders in the Black community, where we are seeing an increase in murders, and the horrific murder a week or so ago of this young man, Tyshawn Lee, who was 9 years old, apparently killed in a gangland-type slaying, shot nine times as a vendetta for his father. I mean, we've got serious, serious problems. And it's striking to me that the press is not asking questions about these issues and the presidential candidates are not offering solutions.
Do you think they just are not ready for that, or they don't have an answer for it?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of both. But I think, frankly, that it's up to Black leadership to raise these issues, since no one else seems to be doing that. And so my organization is taking it upon ourselves. We're putting this out to the candidates, so we're looking for responses. I've had some discussion with one candidate about it. But we're saying, look, this is an issue. If you want to talk about rebuilding the American economy, you want to talk about prosperity, you want to talk about getting unemployment down, you can't just sort of ignore the fact that Black unemployment is twice white unemployment. Mm-hmm. You can't ignore the fact that Black youth have about a 50% unemployment rate. I mean, there are some serious systemic issues going on in the Black community. And if you want to rebuild the American economy, the inner city has got to be part of that.
You know, and a huge thing, too, is that people are just scared, whether you're Black or white or any color. Some of us are scared. I hear it all the time. Well, I'm just scared to go outside of my door. I don't want to go to this place. I don't want to go to that place. You can be anywhere today, and there's crime.
You know, Twana, I just wrote a piece that'll be released probably in the next day or two. We are all upset, and rightly so, about 129 people killed in Paris, and about this horrific attack on Paris, about 180 people injured. And it is horrible, and I don't want to minimize that in any way. My heart goes out to those people, those families. But do you know that across this country, 500 young Black men will lose their lives this month and every month, and maybe even more than that? I mean, 500. That's not to mention those who are wounded in shootings and stabbings and robberies. I'm just talking about 500 who will die. And yet there doesn't seem to be a hue and cry, even a concern about the fact that we are losing so many of our young citizens to urban crime.
And it's not, you know, your son, because I have two young sons, they don't have to be in a gang or in the wrong, you know, in a place where there's criminal activity. They can be anywhere. And that's, you know, everything's going on anywhere. So, it doesn't matter where your kids are at this point.
Oh, no, because the violence is taking everybody. I mean, there was a situation in which a mother, a grandmother, and a child, a baby, were all shot. I think that the mother and daughter were killed and the baby just wounded, thank God. But I mean, you know, they weren't in gangs. They weren't involved in anything wrong. I mean, so right, you're right. This is affecting all of the, which are most of the Black community, the law-abiding citizens who are getting up every day, trying to go to work, trying to take care of themselves. And you're right. They are captives in their own homes, afraid not only of going outside, but of bullets whizzing through the doors, through the walls. Bishop, so it's a horrific situation.
Bishop Jackson, if you will, what is the core of this thing? Is it joblessness? Is it the educational system? Is it economics? What's the core of what's happening? Because this has grown into epidemic proportions here.
It is an epidemic at this point, and I think it's all of the above, Twana. But to be very honest, look, I was raised in the ghetto, small town, but a very urban town outside of Philadelphia. I grew up on Third Street, which was the heart of the ghetto. And the difference between me and a lot of the guys who ended up in jail was that I had a dad in the home who didn't put up with any mess. I mean, who made clear to me what was expected of me and was prepared to enforce it. So I realize that when you have a poor educational system around you, and the educational system, by the way, when I grew up in the 60s, was, believe it or not, much better than it is right now, even though we had segregation and we had other problems. Still, you, by and large, you got a better education than you're getting in many of the urban schools today. And, yeah, there is the problem of the economy, and that has an impact. My father was a welder. He didn't have an important or high-paying job. It was enough for him to take care of us. But I think there's a spiritual component to this that we've got to come back to.
Absolutely.
I was at a big town meeting in Newport News in Virginia, because they've been having a spate of murders and problems. 1,500 people showed up, and a lot of the public officials had various answers. One little lady stood up, and the crowd erupted. She said, "When are we going to come back to teaching our children respect for authority again, for their elders, for the police, for whoever it is, just showing respect for other people?" And the crowd erupted. And that told me that there is an issue of that we have to address within the community about how we're enculturating and teaching our children in different ways than we used to. When I was growing up, if it was an adult you were dealing with, it was yes, ma'am. It was no,
that's
ma'am.
Right.
It was
no,
yes,
sir.
Sir. No,
that's
sir.
That's right. That's right.
And we've come a long way since then. So we've clearly got some sort of cultural renewal. And I talk about that in my plan, some cultural renewal to do. That can't be done by government. It's got to be done by churches and leaders within the Black community.
You know, a big part of that to me is media. When television and cable began to show people fighting and cursing and screaming at each other, and then you see it, you know, for our president being disrespected, it took it to a whole nother level. It has taken it to a whole nother level. And our kids have grown up seeing this stuff, thinking this is the way of life.
Well, look, it reinforces all the negatives,
yes,
doesn't it? I
mean,
that's the problem. When I was growing up, I mean, I'm in my early 60s. When I was growing up, all the TV programs showed respect of children,
right,
for their parents. It showed, you know, I remember growing up, and even when a couple was married, if they showed them in bed, they were in twin beds.
Exactly.
I
mean,
that's how careful they were not to cross the line. Well, nowadays, of course, it's going in the entirely opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
But here again, you know, parents, mothers and fathers in the home have to take control of the situation and say to their children, "Look, you can't watch that."
Mm-mm.
Because that's wrong. I don't care how big a show it is. I don't care how much people like it. It's wrong. We don't talk like that in our home.
Right.
You don't behave like that in our home. And so we've got to just really kind of fight against the culture. And I know that's a tough job, but we've got to fight against the culture and let our children know exactly where we stand.
But we can do it, because who runs the house? We run the house. And if that means taking your kids' devices, you got to do that.
Exactly.
If that means putting filters on them, you got to do that. If that means not letting them hang out with certain places, and because I did it as a single mom. And, you know, it was tough, like you said, fighting against the culture. My kids didn't even see rap videos till after they were 12 and 13. I refused to let them see them. And then I would sit there with them and say, "You know, that's not real. You know, you can't bring a girl like that home." You know, and I had the commentary going on the whole time. And thank God, you know, they're single, successful young men. But I had to be very diligent in what I did for them.
Well, and you see, one of the things that we don't want to say, because it's not politically correct, is to say, you know, parents, in some cases, you're falling down on the job. You're not doing what you need to be doing. Now, we realize there are a lot of things that are militating against you, and we understand that, but still, nothing absolves you of your responsibility to be the primary teacher of that child. That's right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So we do say that. We do say that because when the kids grow up and the parents go, I don't know what happened. Well, you happen. You know, we have a responsibility. We really, really do. And sometimes I've seen a lot of parents trying to get theirs and kind of just buying stuff for their kids to keep them, you know, oh, he'll be okay. I just bought him a new PlayStation. No, he needs you. He needs more time with you.
Or $200 sneakers as a substitute for, right, taking the time.
Absolutely.
Say, okay, I'm going up to the school today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit in on your class. Mm-hmm. Or I will be at that game with you. You know, you were talking about how we raised our children. I used to search my children's rooms.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't like it. But I would go in because I wanted to know, what are they reading? What are they looking at? What do they have in there?
Who are they talking to? Because all of that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just part of the job. And then, you know, it would be nice, and we need to demand this too, that the schools reinforce what we're trying to do rather than fighting it.
Yes.
And that the media show some respect for the fact that we're trying to raise our daughters, frankly, not to be video prostitutes.
Mm-hmm,
because,
mm-hmm.
you know, nowadays you're not really a girl at 14, 15, 16 years old if you're not showing skin and shaking your booty. I mean, that's not what womanhood is. It's certainly never been what black womanhood has been. And we have kind of made heroines out of the people who frankly, become very, very wealthy doing that.
Right.
And the gangster rappers who become wealthy talking about violence and calling women out of their name and all this sort of thing. And I think at some point we got to stand up and say, you know, that's not authentic black culture.
Right.
That's not who we are.
Right, right. It's not. And, you know, I used to always say to the students that I mentored, would your parents be proud of you? You know, would you do that in front of your parents? Oh, no. Well, then you can't do that in front of here. You can't do that in front of other people. Teaching them to respect other adults. And it's so huge. It's so huge. When you get on public transportation and the kids are cursing and carrying on, it's so embarrassing.
We need, you know, I've heard a lot of talk and read about the Harlem Renaissance. And, of course, it was a renaissance of art and music and a sense of pride and the talent that black people had been given. We need a cultural renaissance in the black community, which restores some of the values. I mean, when I was growing up, for example, education was paramount.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't play around with that. My father used to always tell me, son, you've got to pay the cost to be the boss. If you want to go in life, you got to study as hard as anybody else does. In fact, and I know this may sound horrible to some people, but my father used to tell me all the time, son, you've got to be twice as good as the white man.
Well, it's true. That's what our parents used to tell us too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but well, see, all that, you say that now, and people say, oh, that's racist. You can't say that. You know?
Yeah.
But the reality is you are competing with other people for jobs, for opportunities, and you can't expect people to just give it to you because they feel sorry for you. We've got to earn it. And you know, we see that in sports, but we don't seem to have translated that over to education and academia and business and other things. The people who have succeeded in the black community, in sports and in business, some of them, by the way, have left sports and become excellent business people, are people who worked hard and paid the price to get where they're going. Nobody's given it to them. They've earned it. And look, thank God for the breaks that we get in life. But we have to go out there. You know, my pastor used to say to me, you got to pray like everything depends on God, but then work like everything depends on you.
That's right. That's right. You are unveiling Project Create, and tell us about that.
Yeah, Project Create is a three-pronged approach, which sort of leaves out the government because our conclusion was, look, the government has built public housing. The government has brought in urban renewal. The government has done all these things, and they all end up the same way, abject failures.
Mm.
And maybe a few people benefit, but the overwhelming majority of the people are left in the same condition they were in, or in some cases even worse off.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to have a different approach. So we take a private sector approach, churches, businesses, private educational institutions, and those public schools and public institutions that want to get involved in it, to come together around cultural renewal, economic awakening, and private and technical education.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just hit the economic awakening part of it. I've said, you know, the people in the black community who seem to best understand capitalism and how the free market system works are drug dealers.
And they're good because at it, aren't they?
They have a product, and they understand that if you have a product that people in the marketplace want, they will be the pathway to your door to get it.
Yeah.
Now, we need to take that and turn that into an entrepreneurial spirit for positive, legal, productive things. So teach our young people, you know, it's not just about finding a job. It's also about being an entrepreneur. It's also about, you know, creating a service, creating a business, doing something that will help you to build a life for yourself and earn a decent living. And it's happening all over the country, but we're not celebrating that. I mean, people are doing computer work and they're doing, you know, a whole variety of different entrepreneurial activities. We got to amplify that and make that a part of the inner city economy so that we're not just depending on somebody to come in and dump government money in to somehow create jobs, but the jobs are springing up from within the community because of the entrepreneurial activities of people partnered, by the way, with these corporations. You know, they say there's about $3 trillion in corporate money that's sitting on ice right now. Just sitting there. You know, Dr. Dre became a billionaire with one deal with Apple, and Apple didn't go broke, making him a billionaire.
That's right.
I mean, that shows how much cash they have on hand. Well, how about some of these companies invest in some of these inner city businesses or invest in helping these young entrepreneurs to get more training, more business understanding and development, come alongside them to help build, expand their businesses. I mean, there are things that could be done, but nobody's talking about them. And so Project Create is going to talk about these things that we could be doing that are well within the realm of possibility and I think could have a transformative effect on the black community and the inner city. Over time, I mean, it's not going to happen overnight,
no,
but I think over time, I think it'd have a transformative impact.
Absolutely. How can people get involved with Create?
Well, they can contact me at standamerica.us, standamerica.us. Go to our website and just sign up. And we haven't, you're getting a kind of a preview. We haven't publicly unveiled the program yet. We've been talking about it. We're going to unveil it mid-December. Right now, we have a planned press conference on December 9th to unfold the entire program. We're also waiting to see which presidential candidates are willing to get behind it and say, this is something I can support. Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. We want this on the agenda as a matter of discussion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Give the website one more time.
It's Stand America, just like it sounds, standamerica.us.
All right. This is Bishop E.W. Jackson and talking about presidential candidates. Do they have a plan for urban America? And you're right. Nobody asked the question and nobody says anything about it. So it's time for
us
to stand
sure
up
that
and
changes.
Do it. Exactly. Thank you so much for joining us, Bishop.
Thank you for having me.